You're listening to the Overeaters Anonymous Mid-Peninsula podcast. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. For more information, please visit oamidpeninsula.org.
All right, I'm Corrine. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came into OA back in 1980. But I didn't stay. So I'm going to go back at the very beginning of when I really started on a path of the beginnings of my path of self-destruction. In childhood, that's where I learned compulsive overeating behaviors. I came from a large family and I was the second of eight. And I realized early that you had to eat fast in order to get seconds. And I was a pretty high energy child and seconds were really important for me. So there was that. There was always dessert. But I was the child that would bring the dessert in from the garage to serve the other children their dessert. And I would go out in the garage with a spoon and eat before I came in and then take the food back to the garage in the deep freeze and put it in there. But I would eat after I'd already had mine. So these behaviors were already starting, along with licking beaters, licking spoons, scraping everything to the last, the last bit. The Italian side of the family emphasized eating everything on your plate and not having leftovers. They would, at large family gatherings, there would be a few things left on a plate and they go, "Who's going to eat this?" And they'd pass things around until everything was gone. And so you kind of had that culture of, eating past being full. So as a child, I didn't have any sense of what full was. I was a high energy child, so there wasn't a weight issue at that point. When I was in high school, I learned how to restrict because I'd never had my own clothes. I always had my sister's hand-me-downs. And so the only way I could get my own clothes was to lose weight and be a different size than she was. And so I did that. I learned how to restrict. I learned to lie about my food. I told the nuns I was in this lunch and this lunch. I told the nuns I was in that lunch. And so I skipped lunch. Told my parents, I had something at a friend's house. I learned to lie about food. And I did lose a whole dress size. My parents did have to buy me some new clothes. So it worked. So that was one of the things in my little lose weight toolbox. As a young adult, I learned that exercise could be a way to lose weight. And I spent hours jumping rope because that was a very inexpensive way of exercising. I didn't have access to a gym or anything like that. So I would jump rope for hours and got down to 120 pounds at 5'6" and probably looked like a skeleton, but I thought I looked good. So that was another thing in my little, my keep my weight down toolbox. I never really lost control of the weight part of it because I was using these things. I used to use, there were little white pills and we called them Speed. And at one of my jobs, the night crew chief would hand out Speed so that we could work faster. And I found out, that helped with weight control too. So that was another, cool thing, along with, different diet things, because I would yo-yo a bit up and down. And so I've used these things to kind of keep it, keep a lid on it. I had an anorexic pregnancy. I thought water would make me fat. And so I gained 10 pounds during that pregnancy. Thank God the baby was born a month early because I think he was starving to death. And I look back on that now and I go, holy moly, what was I thinking? I didn't want to get fat. That was it. I didn't want to get fat with my first pregnancy. By the grace of God, that child's okay. So I had these behaviors, that kept the lid on things. But in 1980, I lost total control. That's when I started using food as a celebration. I was pregnant again, and I was so happy to be pregnant. And I celebrated. I celebrated with food, and I put on a lot of weight. So I came out of that pregnancy, and then successive pregnancies. Okay, because I had three more children. I had three children close together then. So at that point, I've had my fifth child. I am, grossly overweight and just really feeling the agony of the compulsive overeating. I had lost control. None of my tool things worked on how to, lose weight. I can remember in tears going to the cupboard in the kitchen and holding those cupboard doors, looking for food to eat, because that was my normal thing in the evening. And just saying, "Oh God, help me." And in my mind came the term Overeaters Anonymous. And I have no idea where that came from. I don't know where I'd heard it or seen it. But the next day I got out the phone book, the big fat phone book, looked it up. By God, it was listed, called the number, somebody answered. There was a meeting in my town the next evening. And that began my journey, with recovery. It didn't last for a long time, but I lost the weight. I came in, lost the weight, worked steps 1 and 12. I, knew I was a compulsive overeater. My life was out of control. And I did service. So I kind of bookended, did those two things. Eventually left abstinent, but thought I was fixed, cured, and of course, all the weight came back over the years. Ended up back in the 90s, where I did get a sponsor, worked the steps, got up to step 9, and my sponsor suggested that I should go into therapy, which was a good thing to suggest because I did need it. And so I had lost the weight. I ended up, leaving again, gained all the weight back, and came back in 2000. And each time, I have to admit, each time I came back 10 pounds heavier. That was the pattern. 2000, came back, went to a few meetings, and I knew I wasn't willing to do what it would take. I just wasn't willing. So when I came back in 2011, I was desperate. I was really just so miserable and out of control. I had gone up to 220 pounds. Before I came back, I did, manage to lose 5 doing other pay and weigh type things, because I tried a lot of different things. But in the back of my mind, I knew that where I had been before is what worked. So I came back very humble. Willing to do what it took, knowing that my health was in very, was so many of my health issues were weight related. And so I came back, got a sponsor. I knew what I was getting myself into this time. I came back willing. I got abstinent 2 days before my first meeting because I knew what I was getting into. And it was like, okay, I can do this. But I did get a sponsor, and I really began working the steps. And I think the most important thing was I came back humble. I came back willing. I came back ready to be honest. And the I was just really fortunate to be able to stay abstinent during that time, mainly because, I read the literature and I developed some strategies to help me stay abstinent while I was learning that the underlying reason why I never really got and stayed permanently abstinent before was that I was always stumbling over the third step. I had come into the program spiritually with a superiority complex, I went to church, I prayed, I had this thing wired, steps 1, 2, and 3, no problem. I didn't realize that step 3 was the stumbling block that I had never really bought into. I had not given myself wholly over to, completely to the God of my understanding. I had not really surrendered. And that seemed to be the thing that had kept me from staying too, and from really buying into the program as being a program of service. This didn't come right away. This wasn't like a blinding, you know, spiritual awakening thing. It was a very gradual process. Every year I committed to working the steps. I got into a step study that rolled over every year and started over again. And somehow, fortunately, that group of people, you know, I just kept going back to, and I'm still in it today, you know, and I co-host now a step study every year. It runs for about 10 to almost 11 months of the year. And in working the steps, you know, I would redo this third step. And a little bit by little, I realized that, you know, I had given God my husband. I gave him my kids. I gave him my business. I gave him my finances. But I never really gave him myself. Not 100%. I was a holdout. You know, there was a part of me that didn't trust. There was a part of me that was afraid that if I did do that, something would be lost. And what I didn't realize, what I had so much to gain. And so over a period of time, and I have to admit that the real change started when I began, in one of the step studies, committing to saying the third step prayer every night on my knees by my bed. And that was when things started turning around for me, where I really started buying into giving myself over to God and to letting my higher power have that control of my life that I had been so desperately clinging to. And once I had done that, I started opening myself up to the possibilities of being of service. I found myself going every week to a convalescent home to visit one of our members who had ended up in there. And I did that for 2 years. That was totally, you know, out of my wheelhouse. That was new. You know, I started sponsoring, and that was, you know, that was a new thing, you know, where I was spending time, you know, helping someone else. I started doing service at meetings, and that was a change. These different things that just helped me give back what I had gotten. The ability to stay abstinent, you know, it's a God-given gift. And at first I thought it was because of all the strategies that I had, you know, that I was the one doing that, that I should get credit for that. You know, I read the literature, you know, I read in the back of this book here, Overeaters Anonymous, okay, on the back of that book in the appendix. The first one, the Teresa Wright writes in there about having a need to have strategies. And what were my strategies? You know, I circled it, strategies is circled in here, you know, three or four times, tools and strategies. Well, we know what the tools are. We read those at the beginning of the meeting, but the strategies were how I stayed abstinent. And I put down things like this. I framed my food. When I made a decision, you know, before I took that first bite, I would lay down my food and I would draw a mental frame around it. And that was what I was eating. I knew that was nutritious because once I took the first bite, then it was like brain disconnects. So framing my food was a strategy, you know, that I didn't have seconds. That was it. This is a good nutritional meal. You know, when I go out to dinner, never eating anything before what I ordered, anything they put on the table before I ordered, you know, what food I ordered is not my food. And anything that came after that, you know, the dessert was not my food. And that was a strategy, was I would drink a decaf cup of coffee for dessert if people were eating dessert. And that was my dessert. So, you know, there's other things, you know, like, you know, when there's lots of food, buffets or, you know, potlucks. And I did the one plate strategy. One plate, no touching, no stacking, no bread. And, you know, so this was my no seconds. So that was my rule, you know, and that was my strategy. So these things, that and the one about when you have things over, guests over, I had lots of parties. Say no, give it away or throw it away. That was so hard. Throwing food away, very hard. But I learned to do it and give it away. now I'm set beforehand. I've got containers and things ready to send food home with people. You know, that's a strategy, is to, get rid of it. So this strategy thing, the thing she doesn't talk about in this is anything about the spiritual aspect of it. And I had to go back over that. And my sponsor pointed out to me as I was discussing this with her, she said, "And where did those strategies come from?" You know, and I call them personal guidelines now. And I realized that these guidelines came from God. And in, step three of the 12 and 12, it talks in there about personal guidelines. So these are my, they're not just strategies, they are my personal guidelines that God has given me. I didn't think these up myself. He gave them to me. You know, he helped me with this. And so that's one of the things that helps me stay abstinent is, knowing that God has given me these guidelines to keep me safe. So I have a, my plan now, in every day is I pray in the morning. I have 20 minutes of prayer and meditation that I do every morning. Part of this goes back to my childhood and, religious tradition. So, it's a formal way of praying. But it gives me an opportunity to also include prayerfully pray for the people that have asked me to pray for them. And that, it's every day. I do that every day. At night, I kneel by my bed every night and say the third step prayer, because that has just become part of my action plan. I have to do that. I have to bookend my day. God's in between, and at some point, I had a sponsee that was struggling, and, what can I do? What can I do? The kitchen's such a dangerous place. I said, "Well, visualize." I said, "Do you believe in angels?" "Oh, yeah." I said, "Visualize those angels with swords crossed blocking the doorway at night. Don't go there. They're guarding your kitchen." I told, another, "I have a candle in my kitchen. It just represents my higher power for me. He's there. Okay. If I need help, he's there. It's just symbolic, but whatever tricks work, that's part of my day. I send my food every night into my sponsor. Okay. Every night I commit that food. I do a written 10th step at night. Okay. It's kind of formal. It's from an OA journal. In fact, okay, just a second. I have one right here. It is, okay. This was, oh yeah, Region 7 Daily Journal, approved by OA. Inside has, a way of doing a 10th step and organizing your day for the next day. And it has a list for gratitudes. And anyway, it's real, I do this every night. And that helps me stay on track. I told you about doing the service and being in a step study. Working the steps every year cleans house for me. The first time I did it, my God, the baggage I was carrying around was just, unbelievably heavy. The just the things that I had to get out in my fourth step and fifth step with my sponsor took a long time. Well, now I do one every year. It's there's fewer and fewer things on it as far as people I need to make amends to. But there's always something. There's always something from the past that I never came out before. There's always something now that I've kind of been just playing around with that I really need to straighten out, and looking at my life and keeping things clean helps me it be a better sponsor, because I know the joy that comes from cleaning up my side of the street. I know how my relationships with my family and my children have improved, how my ability to be sensitive and caring and empathetic with other people has changed. My world is no longer about me with the center of it. And I spent a lot of my life in the center of my world. And now, I've taken a step outside and put God in the middle and let him guide me on how to be of service to other people. It's not perfect. It is not. I do the best I can, knowing that God is there to guide me. It's a wonderful, wonderful program that I feel has saved my life, because I know that the way I was eating compulsively and as miserable as I was, that, you know, that was no way to continue. So I'm grateful that all of you are here today. I'm grateful for, you know, OA and how, and all the ways our program has helped other people. So, you know, my best advice to everybody is keep coming back and listen, you know, find something that works for you. Thank you.